Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, world. Welcome once again to Tuesday Talk with Key West Lou. I am your host, Louis Patron. First show of the new year. I was excited going into this evening. I had a hell of a show prepared, and I'm going to deviate now from the prepared script with regard to the first two topics I am going to discuss. It involves matters which I am somewhat familiar with. I spent a career as an environmental attorney in New York State. Clean air, clean water. And things are happening, and it's in the north. These things are happening in Michigan and the Northeast, and I want to share them with you. I am visibly upset. You can tell from the tone of my voice. 10 minutes ago, it came over the news on TV. Breaking news, you know how they say it. And here's the story. 4 months ago, I spoke on the show about the Flint, Michigan water system. They were taking their water for drinking purposes, etc., out of the Flint River. The water contained lead, and something has to be done because you can't drink water with lead. Let me tell you outright, I'm an expert on this. Lead. Children ingest lead. They become brain damaged and stay brain damaged the rest of their lives. I handle tons of these cases in New York State. The child has to be cared for the rest of their life. They require attention. Lead poisoning, brain damage to children. They're drinking this water. I can't believe it. I said 4 months ago, you could see the contamination, the copper coloring, et cetera. It had been tested. Well, they continue to drink the water. And here's what happened today. The governor of Michigan declared an emergency situation in the city of Flint with regard to the drinking water because it contained lead. The United States Attorney's Office announced today they're entering into the picture. I don't know why the hell these people didn't do this 4 months ago or 6 months ago. Here's how this probably occurred, and I'm not sure, but I can piece this together. Flint was buying their water from Detroit. Detroit has great water, by the way. You will recall 2 and 3 years ago, Detroit was in great financial hardship. And they went into bankruptcy, and a trustee was appointed to run Detroit. The Detroit Water Board was owed a ton of money in the millions of dollars, and they needed to recoup those monies. Besides getting it from the people that owed the money, I've got to assume that Detroit raised the cost of its water. Now, Flint, seeing this happening, the city of Flint said, hey, we can't afford this or we don't want to pay this. There is another source of water that has been used and can be used, and it's the Flint River. And I don't know if people tested it properly or didn't test it. There never were complaints. But anyhow, it was discovered as much as 4 months ago I knew about this. Everybody else should have known about it, and I believe people did, but no one did anything about it. They just don't understand. They don't believe how our kids are going to be brain damaged the rest of their lives. Well, the cases have been coming up now. You know, we're going into 2 or 3 years drinking this water, and the cases have developed medically. I don't know what's going to happen. I know what's going to happen. I can tell you right now what's going to happen. They're going to stop using Flint water. They're going to go back to Detroit water or something else and pay whatever they have to pay because health comes first, no matter how broke you are as a municipality. Somebody may go to jail for not doing their job properly in evaluating the quality of the Flint River water for use by the residents of Flint, Michigan. Everyone's going to be pointing the finger at each other. The thing that bothers me, though, is there are already children who have become brain damaged. More of these brain damaged children will be discovered as time goes on. All right? And these kids, there's no cure, have to be cared for the rest of their lives. A disgraceful situation. We don't take care of the earth we live on. Now, the next item involves something I was going to talk about towards the end of the show tonight, but because it involves the environment, I've moved it up and joined it with this Flint, Michigan story. I can't believe either. Male bass, fish, bass fish, smallmouth and largemouth bass fish. In the Northeast, male bass fish, these are freshwater fish, are experiencing sex changes. These are unwanted sex changes. It's again in the Northeast. The freshwater waterways are polluted. The Washington Post reported this past week that 85% of male smallmouth bass, 85% of male softmouth bass have developed characteristics of the opposite sex, especially eggs. Eggs have developed in the male smallmouth bass, 85% of them, where the testes, where their balls should be. The balls are gone and female eggs are there. As to the largemouth bass, it's only 47%. Now, obviously something's wrong with the freshwater ways of the Northeast. They've been contaminated also. Pollution came out of the factories, the tanneries, everything. They dumped every bit of crap that wasn't smoke into a waterway. And if you're past the ocean, the waterways are all freshwater. And this stuff accumulated. And here's what we've got. The fish are changing from male to female. Don't laugh. Would you ever thought this could happen? 50 years from now, are we going to have human beings? Something's going to occur to them like this over a period of time? This is, again, it's disgusting. It's terrible. It's the environment not having been cared for over the past 100 years. We've got to do something about this. We also got to do something about carbon dioxide up in the air. But this problem is totally separate and distinct from that. And that is the opening situation that I wanted to share with you. Now, going to what was going to be the opening, which I thought was a terrible thing in this country today, it looks mild compared to the Flint, Michigan situation. I am concerned with the anti-government militia men who have taken over federal lands and a federal building in Oregon. Today is the fourth day they are occupying that property. The leader of the group is Amon Bundy. The name Bundy may be familiar to you. In 2014, his father had a bunch of guys with him, and they had guns, and he had a standoff with the federal government in Nevada. The dad owned property in Nevada. He had his cows eating the grass off federal land in Nevada. The government wanted to be paid for it. He didn't want to pay. They had a judgment. So he fortified himself and said, I'm not going to pay you guys. And the United States government brought the army in and everything else. And it was just a standoff. No one did anything. And then they came to some arrangement, and the situation died. All right, the situation died. The only trouble is the government, our government, bit the bullet first. They bit the bullet first. They blinked first because to this day, Amon Bundy's father still hasn't paid a penny on the judgment he owes the federal government for the grass. Going back to the situation in Oregon today, Bundy is the head of a group. They call themselves the Citizens for Constitutional Freedom. The Citizens for Constitutional Freedom. As I understand it, these people basically believe laws should not apply to anyone in this country. I don't care whether speeding or what have you, because people should be free to determine what the law is that they should follow and they want to follow. We shouldn't have these legislative bodies and everything else. These people are a bit wacky, I think. Some of you listening to me may agree with them. I think you're wacky if you do. Yesterday, the sheriff of the county asked them to leave. There are many outsiders involved. He's got a little army over there, and there are many outsiders. They're armed. They have said they are prepared to shoot if necessary. Would you believe this? Prepared to shoot if necessary. Well, I'll tell you what I would do with these guys, because we can't afford this in this country. We got enough problems all over the world. Okay, we got to have this in our own backyard. I'd go in. This is federal property, federal building. I'd go in with federal troops right away. We cannot tolerate this kind of conduct. Some people are going to get shot. Some may be killed on both sides, all right? If you wanted to take care of this problem properly, we should do what we're doing in Syria right now and just have the U.S. Air Force go in and bomb the hell out of that building, okay? And that's the end of them, and none of our boys are going to get hurt. But we don't do those things like that in the United States. We only do it in the Middle East. But I do that. I won't screw around with these people. A message must be sent out because our government's going to blink again. We blink all the time, especially in the last 4 years. And it can't go on like this. Another thing that bothers me about this is think about the black protests over the past year or 2 years, okay? The blacks protesting in the streets of these various cities have been treated more poorly. They've been treated poorly in comparison to how these militants are being treated in Oregon, all right, or were treated in his dad's situation in Nevada. The police will be forceful with the blacks in the communities of this country when we have these black-white issues. They say they're enforcing the law, protecting property, and people get beat up, and they get put in jail, okay? What's good for the goose is good for the gander. Why isn't the same procedure being followed with the white men in Oregon? Simple question. Bundy, the leader, has said, and people can think of this, those who are experts in this area, believe that this is an anti-government. This situation in Oregon is an anti-government call to arms. Some believe, and it's the same thing I just said, that there is an intent to begin a military revolution. Start by taking charge of the county that this building is located in Oregon. Bad days ahead. We've got to deal with the problem. All Lewis is saying is deal with it tomorrow, the next day. Don't let this thing just go on and on forever. Send your men in. Do what you got to do. Enforce the law. If they were black, you'd be enforcing the law against them. Which now brings me to, you know, it's amazing the things over the years I have talked about. It truly is, because I've been writing my blog now for 10 years. I did a TV show for 3 years several years ago. I've been doing this Blog Talk radio show for 8 or 10 years also. And there's repetition in this. And things you've talked about yesterday come to light again today. I want to talk about rape kits. When a woman gets raped, in this country, there are kits now, and the government says, federal government, you use these kits to test various parts, the woman's vagina, you look for the sperm, you look for the DNA content, and various different things that have to be done. And if it's done, then this rape kit, where it's contained, will be used to prosecute the rapist. Very good. And it'll be much easier to convict him. All right. Now, it must be done within 48 to 72 hours after the rape. What's happened is that, and this came up today, and this is the only reason I'm talking about it again, and I'm glad, though, because it gives me an opportunity to show how we don't do what we're supposed to do. In Florida, it was reported today, there are 13,000, you heard me, 13,000 rape kits that have not been tested yet. They're sitting in a back room in some police station or county office building. 13,000 rape kits that have not been tested. 13,000 rape cases that have not been prosecuted. Now, 5 years ago on my television show, I did an hour show on this because at the time, this rape kit situation not being tested became prominent in the news. So you understand what we're talking about, let me give you some numbers. Today in Florida, there are 13,000 untested kits. California, 12,000. Illinois, 8,000. New York State had 17,000 in 1999. However, at that time, they decided we're going to do something about this, okay? And it took them to 2007, but they cleaned up those 17,000 kits. They got them tested. And today, in the United States, as of 2014, the estimate as to the number of untested kits is, you're not going to believe this, 400,000. Now, somebody's slipping around here. You got women getting raped. Some of them don't want to prosecute. Others do. Prosecutor says, well, we don't have enough proof. They are hard cases to win by the woman, I'm going to tell you right now. They are hard. But with these rape kits, it's supposed to be easier. But no one does anything. And you got 400,000 rape kits untested, which means there's 400,000 rapes that were never prosecuted. Now, why is this happening like this? Why has this happened this way over the years? The reasons they give it, well, there's no emphasis. Nobody pays any attention to rapes. No one seems to care about rapes, and I'll tell you why. This is a male-driven society. Women are second-class citizens. I'll repeat it. We still live in a male-driven society. Women are second-class citizens. Virginia Slims, remember, you've come a long way, baby. They haven't come all the way yet, though, women. The real reason underlying this, but I'm going to tell you right now, that second-class woman thing is a valid, real reason. The big primary reason is money. It costs $800 to test a kit. $800. Now, the federal government says you must test. The counties say, or the municipalities, where are we going to get the money to test these kits? So they just don't do it. The local legislative bodies don't allocate money to pay for the testing of the kits. So it never gets done because money is the big thing. I don't think anything's going to come of this even now. Florida, it's in the news today. Tomorrow it won't be, and that's probably going to be the end of it. It's a disgraceful situation. Someone someday has got to take the bull by the horns and resolve this problem. Otherwise, we're going to have tons of women getting raped all the time and nobody paying for it. That simple. Want to talk about Henry Ford. Love this one. Henry Ford. Henry Ford, Ford Motor Company. On this day, January 5th, in 1914, he raised the minimum wage from $2.25 an hour to $5. It was around 2 1/4. Nobody knows the exact number for some reason. I don't know why. So I estimated it 2 1/4. He more than doubled the minimum wage. Can you imagine $5? Look how far the minimum wage has risen since 1914. Here we are. Over 100 years later, and the minimum wage is what, $7.35 or 85 cents an hour? Boy, we do good for our workers. The minimum wage sucks. Look at that. It's basically what? It hasn't even tripled from 2 1/4. It basically has in over 100 years, for shame. The reason he did it, or the reason that it's reported and written up historically that Ford increased their pay, is because he wanted his people to be able to afford to buy the cars he was producing cheaply on a production line. If they didn't earn enough money, they couldn't buy the product. And he wanted them to buy the product so there'd be money to be made. Good, no, it's proper. That's okay. The problem was, Henry Ford was the first one to come up with a production line to develop a product. You start at point one, and what, you put a frame up, then you put a tire on it, somebody bolts the tire, somebody puts in a carburetor, somebody puts in spark plugs, and so forth down the line. And by the time that car gets to the end of the production line, it is a full-blown, four-wheel motor vehicle, okay? And this is the way he was able to turn them out rapidly and cheaply, sell them cheaply, and make money. The problem was, working people back in the early 1900s were not accustomed to working on a production line. You had to move your ass. The line kept moving. The conveyor belt, I'm going to put it that way, kept moving. And you had to move with it and do your job so the next person next to you could do their job. And people were not accustomed to working that fast and that hard, and they got tired. It was a new way to work. They didn't like it, and they quit, all right? And when they quit, there was a problem. And here is the reason, my friends, why Henry Ford doubled the minimum wage. It took 4,000 people, 4,000 employees, to run that production line, 4,000. The only trouble was that so many quit that in the year 1914, the year before that, Henry Ford had a turnover. He lost 54,000 employees. Follow me. He lost 54,000 employees in a year, and only 4,000 were needed. So people kept quitting in huge numbers. They had to be retrained. We all know when you retrain, it costs you money to retrain people. Your production's down because things are moving slower, and he was afraid he was going to go out of business. So he felt the way to solve the problem, to keep these people who are not accustomed to working at this pace on the production line, is to pay them the astronomical amount back then, $5 an hour was, and he did. And again, it was only because he had a turnover of 54,000 employees in 1 year for an operation that only took 4,000 employees. That's the real story concerning Henry Ford and his quote-unquote generosity. My column in Conk Life this week is stay out of civil wars, fight wars to win. Stay out of civil wars, fight wars to win. I started off writing the article. I just want to give you a brief part of it. The article publishes tomorrow, and you should read it. You can pick it up off my website. You'll see Conk Life column. Just click on it, and it'll come up. I started this because most people are unaware that the United States invaded Russia in late 1917 and early 1918. We invaded Russia. The Civil War was on in Russia. The world feared communism. They feared if the Bolsheviks won, they were the Reds. If the Reds won, communism would spread throughout the world. Now, the Reds, they had deposed the Tsar, as you recall. And it was a civil war between the Reds and the Whites. The Reds wanted a communistic form of government. The Whites wanted a return to a monarchy-type government, put the Tsar back on. If he was dead, put somebody else in power and run it as a monarchy. When the only problem was, and this was no joke that we invaded, you know how many people we sent over there? We sent 13,000 American soldiers over there to fight. 13,000, and many of them died and were maimed. We don't send 13,000 a lot of times to the Middle East. We start with 50, we put in 100, then we do 1,000, then we go 35,000. No 50 or 100 here. We sent 13,000 over. Other countries did too. Britain, France, Japan, Canada. Japan sent 70,000 soldiers over there to fight in this war against Russia that only lasted from 1917 to 1920. And we had to get out. Nothing was happening. And the reason we had to get out was we went in and we backed the loser. Sounds familiar? We backed the loser over in the Middle East a lot. We went in and backed the loser. We backed the Whites. The Whites got beat up by the Reds. The Reds took control of the government, the communists, and they control to this day in form and substance. All right. So I thought that was an interesting story. During this war, this was an expeditionary force put together by the Allies to kill communism. During this war, I'm talking about the Civil War. I'm not talking about what the Allied forces did. During the Civil War between the Whites and the Reds, it went from 1917 to 1922, all right, there were mass killings. There were genocides. 100,000 Jews alone in the Ukraine were put to death. Everything I read, the Jews are always getting massacred big time. Millions died. Typhus took 3 million Russians during that period of time. Well, I thought this was interesting to share with you. And as it turned out, I said, you know, this is like what's happening in the Middle East. This was a civil war we went into in Russia in around 1918. These are civil wars we're going into in the Middle East. The only difference is they're religious civil wars, Sunni versus Shiites, Sunni versus Shiites. And you know what's interesting? This war between the Sunnis and the Shiites is to determine who is going to rule the Muslim world, which religious sects. They're both Muslims, but which one? And you know how long this war has been going on? It started just after the Prophet Muhammad died sometime around 640. The war's been going on for over 300 years. It's still not resolved, and we're over there screwing around, losing thousands of lives, bodies maimed. We're in a civil war. It's none of our business. I've been saying, and I keep saying, let these people kill each other. No matter what we do, we're not going to resolve it. We can't come out ahead in any fashion. Now, I read something recently that 90% of the wars that the United States has been involved in since World War II are civil wars. Think about it. It makes sense. Friends today that we go to help in the Middle East are not our friends tomorrow. You've seen this happen. They switch sides. We're fighting people who are our allies or supporting somebody else. I don't know what the hell's going on. I get confused now. I can't really follow it. But I know this, and you know this. Victory is not possible. Victory is not possible. We haven't had victories there since 2001 to today, okay? We've been constantly in the Middle East fighting these wars. A religious civil war. I don't care if it's called Iraq or Afghanistan, Pakistan or what, Syria. The country lines don't really matter. It's a religious war, Sunni versus Shiite, okay? The other thing that bothers me, and this all came from when I started thinking about writing about the Russian Revolution and our participation. We don't fight wars to win anymore. We fought only two wars in this century to win. The first was World War II. Total commitment, we had to win. The next was the first Iraqi war. Bush won, had that thing organized. We went out there. We spent 100 days, and the war was over. And we won. Those are the only two wars we won because there was a commitment on the part of the country, the nation, the government, the people to win. Other than that, we've had no commitment any place, all right? We have had no commitment of anywhere else. And the wars have ended up either we lost them or there were stalemates. We lost. Certainly we lost. Think of Korea. Think of Vietnam where we got our asses whipped. Think of that picture of the helicopter taking the last peace people off the roof of the embassy and the Vietnamese shooting at them. No question. We ran with our tail between our legs, okay? I think one of the reasons we don't win wars anymore is because we don't fight them to win them, and this is the reason. We are considered the most powerful nation in the world. I believe we are. We don't exercise the power, and we're afraid to exercise the power for fear someone's going to say, the big guy, look what he did. He stomped on the little guy, didn't give him a break. So we fight half-heartedly to win these wars. Whereas when you go into a country or an area that it's the small guy, that small guy, this war, this civil war he's involved in, this war is the most important thing in his life. And there is total commitment by him and his people to defeat the big, bad United States. That's the story. That's the column for this week, and I hope you read it and enjoy it. That's the show for this week. Some good stuff here. I don't like these environmental things that are happening. I would be concerned. You should be concerned. I don't like what's happening in Oregon. You should be concerned. I'm concerned. We should all be concerned. I thank you again for joining me this week. I enjoy doing the show. I enjoy sharing my thoughts with you. I will hear from you. I know some of you agree with me, some disagree. I love it, though. I love it when I get the letters knocking me, and I love it when I get the letters praising what I said. That's the way it is. This show is archived. As you know, it's available on Block Talk Radio, YouTube. We'll be linked tomorrow to my Key West Lou website. I wrote a book, The World Upside Down. Buy my book if you haven't bought it. It's $3.99. How can you go wrong? My picture on the cover alone justifies the cost. The World Upside Down, Amazon.com. My pleasure being with you tonight. Speak with you next week.